Audi is a senior pursuing a degree in higher education. Your Audi is avid in creative writing. Your Audi has a BFA in film. Your Audi is an avid film watcher who has found himself working on his first movie. Your Audi is 400 years old. Your Audi has an appreciation for figure painting. Your Audi loves his feline friend. Please try to enjoy each fact equally. Your Audi has an appreciation for Mexican cuisine. Your Audi is gay and has a connection to classical music. Your Audi once took psychedelics and convinced themselves they did a crime. Your Audi is making horror films. Your Audi does not like fish.
Hello, everyone. yeah, kind of a different vibe today we got going for us. We're actually here at Lumen headquarters on the severed floor. My name is Sean P. Beside me, I have...
I'm Shell K.
I'm Billy B.
And our Audis said that this is something that they call coffee and credits.
How do we know what our Audis said?
It was in the message that they, you know, they left for us for our integration onto the severed floor.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, yeah, you tried to find a loophole in my whole fucking thing. We're not severed. We're not severed, but we're going to talk about severance.
Hey, guys.
Hey. How's it going? It's Sean and Shell and Billy. We're not severed. Guys, it's just a joke. It's just a joke, guys. oh, what you got?
I thought I could wait until after the episode, but I'm really hungry. I have a jelly donut.
Isn't that from a Dago?
Yeah.
That's just like Agent Cooper.
But if you can't tell, guys, we're talking about Severance. We're not only talking about movies, we're talking about TV.
Yeah.
Talking about television.
We like watching shows.
We do.
We like watching movies.
And what's more topical than, oh my god, you are fucking
You're like Truman in that one scene.
Oh yeah, when he shoves the rest of the donut in his mouth. But nothing is more topical right now than Severance. It's been over for a good couple weeks now. My God, I miss it dearly.
Yeah.
We literally just last night we caught Billy up on the end of season two. Me and Shell watched it as it was airing weekly, and we were like, "This guy's got to watch it." So we sat Billy down. We rewatched all of season one and two.
And now we're here to talk about it.
but like, shit, guys. Like, if you... Oh, wow. You bite the donut bites back. It's going to be a long episode, guys.
All right.
But, yeah, Billy. Like, fresh off the coattails of the finale. Oh, spoilers. Fuck.
Yeah, we're...
There's going to be...
We can't tiptoe around that.
No, we're not tiptoeing around shit. If you have not seen all of Severance season one and two, do yourself a favor and go do it.
Yeah,
if you've seen none of it, fuck, watch it.
That's what I'm saying. You gotta tap in now.
Initial thoughts, fresh off the coattails, literally last night of watching the finale.
We gotta get that Milchick redemption arc, dude. We gotta get shit started now.
Season three, baby. I could feel it.
Yeah.
I could feel it. I didn't realize that in that one scene, fuck, I was kind of smacked last night, but there was a scene where Milchick kind of cried a little bit. He was teared up, I think, after, like, I think it was Mark put him in his place, or who... He got put in his place by someone.
I think, yeah.
It was a heli?
It was when he was... No, it wasn't in the last episode. It was in the ninth episode.
Yeah.
It was when Mark called him...
about work sick. And life balance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Milchick started crying.
That's right. Yeah, I do remember that. Okay. I want to circle back to this later. Because, you know... we got right into the specifics, but fuck! Oh my god. Let's start with season one of the show.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what better place to start?
Yeah.
And, like... Holy shit, like, what a way of, like, getting people hooked on the show. Because what other show does things like Severance does?
Yeah.
It is so one of a kind.
Not really anything else I can think of, like, that I can even use as, like, a reference point.
And it's, like, it's perfect, I think, for this, we're gonna use some smart words here. But in this world that we're currently living in, like, post-fucking-capitalism everything, It's the show is a brilliant critique of capitalism and the horrors that it has on the psyche, and that is why I love it so much. And the first season does not pull any fucking punches. They get into it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool. It is so cool.
Yeah.
Mark is hot. Helly's hot. Gemma's hot.
Milkshake's hot.
There we go.
Man, there's a lot to touch on, but like the intro. Oh, the intro.
Dude, we could have an entire fucking episode just about that.
It's like, so cool.
We should have an episode about episode intros. Like we could do Severance, Succession. Yes,
Twin Peak.
Twin Peak. Well, yeah, we could do Twin Peak because of that fuck-ass bird.
Yeah.
I got issues with him. Find out next episode.
But yeah, go ahead.
I love Severance because I work in an office, so I can appreciate the like corporate. Oh, my brain. Oh, fuck.
Corporate, like, environment? Or like
the corporate symbolism, the corporate like themes in the show, obviously. Blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like it's just, because, like, Sean, your dad keeps referring to it as, like, a sci-fi show, and I think highlighting the fact that it is a sci-fi show is so interesting, because, like,
because it's technology that doesn't exist.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, I can appreciate sci-fi for what it's worth, but I'm a very hard critic with movies, especially movies that like I'm not a huge like fan of the genre, and like sci-fi is very hard for me to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But they take it beyond sci-fi into a place that is more like body horror almost, and like that is what I really enjoy, because like in every episode, like when me and Sean were watching, like when the three of us were watching, and all over TikTok when we were watching it like weekly, this second season we
bandwagoned.
Yeah, when that scene of him running came out and everyone was like, fuck, I gotta watch Severance, we were part of that.
We were on the bandwagon. Sorry, we didn't watch 3 years ago, fake fans, I guess. Gatekeepers.
Who am I mad at?
No one. It's like all the time. I love gatekeeping though. Anyways, but
trying to get back on my train of thought. Hold on.
Sci-fi, body horror.
Oh, every episode, every single person in the world who was watching it had the question in the forefront of their minds of, would you sever yourself? Or what would you do in this situation? Especially at the end of season 2. Spoilers!
Yeah, one final spoiler.
Yeah.
Considering what we're about to talk about.
If you haven't watched it, stop watching. If you don't care, keep watching.
Yeah.
We love you anyway.
That's true.
Leave a like and comment, though. We kind of need it.
Yeah.
No, we don't need it because like we're so cool and self-assured, but like if you want to leave it for us...
Yeah.
Like the people at church that come around with that stupid fucking hat on a stick. Give me money!
Yeah, the donations basket.
I didn't know Borat went to your church.
Give me money at the church.
Getting back on the train.
Yeah.
Fuck, what was the train?
If you would sever yourself.
Yeah, oh, end of season 2, episode 10.
Yeah, me, oh yes. Even in that last episode, like, my favorite thing is, like, because really, I'm just a girl at heart. I'm non-binary. I don't have to keep validating this. But, like, the whole question was, like, would... Like, asking your partner, like, if you were in Mark's place, would you choose me or would you choose Hallie? And, like, it's such an arbitrary question because... And, like, of course I asked Sean it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the discussion... But he wasn't, like...
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, too. I would... Yeah, of course. But he wasn't, like, yeah, I would choose... Like, we had, like, this discussion of, like, it's an arbitrary question because...
It wouldn't be me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any Mark was in love with Hallie. Gemma knew that... The Mark she was talking to was severed, and like we're jumping around.
Did she?
Well, yes. Because here's my point. Because Gemma understands Severance. She went from she literally went from that bottom floor kicking up Drummond's dead little feet to outside that door. She can concept, and she also was severed time and time and time and time and 26 times. Right.
I have a pen for whenever. Like, but does she know that Mark is severed?
Yes, because I think she can... I think because Gemma is She's been proven to be very smart and very aware of what is happening to her on the floor she's on.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, because she's not on the severed floor, but she's on the floor where she's severed a billion times.
Yeah.
I think she can conceptualize, like, if she knows, like, I'm thinking about it in, like, child development terms and, like, very simple, like, dog training kind of terms. Like,
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
If she goes inside a room, doesn't remember it, and comes outside that same room, I think she can conceptualize going up the elevator. So, go, like, therefore, entering the room. Miss Casey, down the hallway, going through that door. I think she can understand, like, okay, fuck. Like, this isn't the Mark that I know, because she... This is my biggest point, like, and I learned... Not I learned this, but I thought of this on rewatch. The way she was talking and begging Mark to come outside was not the way you would be begging your husband of 4 years who you just found for the first time to, like, come back. Like, she was begging him like a dog, almost. She was saying, yeah, like, come on, Mark, come on, come on, we have to go home, come on. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, Mark, please, I need you, like, this is the time we can be together, we finally fucking found each other, hello, knock some sense into you.
I guess it does sound like she's talking to an innie.
Yeah,
and it's the same, like, argument of, like, was Helly at the end of that, was Helly Helena or Helly, which I want to organize this. That'll be our next topic, I think, because that's also a very, like, but I think Gemma did understand that it was Mark, at least, maybe not, like, severed Mark S, but, like, I think she could understand that it was not the Mark that she knew and that, like, she, like, wanted back, because she, like, could understand, like, she went from elevator to outside very quick, but also, like, just the fact of, like, back to, like, the, like, arbitrary question, like, would you still love me if I was a worm, would you choose me or Helly if you were Mark S? Like, I would, there's three arguments that I want to talk about on the severance episode, but for this one, like, I just feel like, no, like, Gemma has every right to be upset, obviously, but I think she can also understand that it wasn't Mark, and I think this is my prediction, but I think she can, like, go home, figure it the fuck out, and eventually at some point Mark is going to have to leave that floor, because his chip is only for that floor, and yeah, there's a ton of rooms. But my prediction for, like, the first episode of season 3 is Mark and Helly in the same font of, like, Mark running through the floors season 2 episode opening. I feel like it's going to be Mark and Helly running through the floors, running into different rooms, trying to figure out where they can, like, stay and stay hidden. In the same, again,
yeah,
in the same,
like,
the same
I can,
font.
Like, envision that in my head right now. Like, I can see them running through all
they
got different...
to start every season with a running sequence.
Yeah.
They know they do. But, like, then it also brings up the point of, like, was that Helly or was it Helena? And
we'll get to that later. I fucking hate that conversation.
Why?
But I think before we keep talking about specifics, I want to touch on, like, the broad aspects of the show instead of just diving right into specific stuff. But
I love my specifics.
We're gonna fucking get to that. The first season, I love how, like, effortlessly they build this world.
Yeah.
Like, it's so impressive that, like, they leave all these little hints around and how, like, it all culminates so perfectly by that 9th episode of season 1. It's just, like, all the little things, they were so flawless. Like, Irving's relationship with Bert! Bert! And, like, Helly being the entire driving force of that first season. Because, like, you think about it, I was talking about this with Shell the other day. It's like the events of Severance weren't going to happen if, like, if Helly wasn't there. Like, Helly is the reason everything happens in the first season. Because, like, Mark, Irving, and Dylan are more or less complacent and content with where they were at before Helly came.
If Helly never showed up, they just would have done. They would have done their work until literally whatever. Until,
and it's like she was the main focal point of that first season, and I think that was such an incredible choice because, like, Mark is our main character, but Helly is the driving force for the show, and that is a dynamic that I really want more shows to touch on.
Yeah,
you could kind of argue that Succession does that, but we'll be talking about Succession like months from now on this show
when Billy finishes.
Yeah. When Billy finishes,
but like, like to touch on that, I feel like looking back on it again from like a broader perspective, like with the context that Helly is an Egan, obviously, or Helena is an Egan, and like she is. Ooh, what's his name? Jame?
Jame.
The creepy fuck? Yeah. Jame.
I wish you'd take them raw. Gross.
Oh, I hate his
gross. Fuck! The way he says fuck in that finale.
Fuck! But.
Jame Egan, if you're watching this, fuck you.
We don't want you on the show. We will never have you on.
Get but Mr. Milchick off my ass. You were really good.
If you're the actor, will have you on. You're cool.
How you doing?
But.
He brings us eggs. All right.
I think it's so interesting to think, or, like, consider the motif of the show in season one being this very, like, corporate, capitalist kind of, like, or anti-corporate, anti-capitalist kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then contextualizing it with season two, learning that Helly's an Egan and, like, all of that, it's such an interesting dynamic. If you take away, like, all of the details and everything of this story and, like, oops, I'm going to relate it to Succession a little bit, but this story of, like, a daughter or a child feeling so, like, uncomfortable and so needing to do something that, like, she being Helly goes as far as to accept being severed, letting herself enter a position of no autonomy at all over what that innie does. And, like, it almost feels like Helena is very fully aware that she just wants to fuck her father over. And, like, that is some evidence for my point of that Helly was Helena in the last episode. But, like, certain little details of, like, even Helena, which I know was the reason she went back up as Helena, but, like, her looking at the footage of Helly and Mark kissing and stuff. And, like, I feel like, again, kind of relating it to Succession in the position of, like, thinking about Shiv as the only daughter
of... There will not be spoilers here.
No, yeah.
I figured you wouldn't...
Thinking of Shiv as the sole daughter of someone so business-minded, so convinced that he is changing the world for something good, is so powerful. Like, relating Helena to Shiv, just because we watched the two shows back-to-back, and, like, they're also two of my favorite characters in media ever, like, I feel like they both have this, like, desire to take over, like, the man, and I'm not talking about, like, the man with the penis, the man as, like, the man, stick it to the man, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like they have this urge to, like, stick it to the man and will do anything and everything they can to do so, and I feel like that is, like, just this kind of, like, this element of the, like, makeup of Severance's, like, story that, like, I feel like a lot of people kind of neglect, where, like, Helly, like, if we think that, like, certain strong emotions transcend Severance or being severed, it helps my point, but, like, I feel like Helly and Helena the same just have this desire to, like, they want something better and they realize what the situation they're in is not good enough for them and that they can do better. And I think that both of their efforts are, like, fully, like, pushed by, like, trying to, again, stick it to the man.
Yeah.
And I feel like again, with like corporate and capitalism, whatever, I feel like that's such like a social dynamic of Severance that like the only other show that I've seen do it in such like a kind of not like sneaky way, but like this hidden, like you really have to dig to find it way. Like, again, it's like Succession. Like, it's nothing to do with gender so much as having to do with being a daughter, capital D, and like having a father, mm-hmm. capital F. And like, I don't know anything about that. My papa died, so. But I'm just going from what I saw or what I've seen in media, and I think like the focus is very always like Mark and Gemma and Devin and Rickon. And like, I feel like it's so interesting to also touch on like, and there's also this like, everyone's having their own revolution. And I feel like that is, like, the central theme that season two kind of gave us.
Yeah, I agree. I think.
And I kind of, like, because Irving literally said it with his words. Like, he's revolting in his way.
Yeah.
Mark is revolting in the most obvious kind of, like, hand-fed-to-us way.
Hallie Dillon in the band. Literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
And, like, Dillon is revolting in both his innie and outie form. And, like, I will ramble again. I'm going to let these two fucking talk for a second. I'm going to ramble again when we get to Dillon, because he's my favorite character, and I have a lot of feelings about that.
But yeah. no, you're such a good talker.
Thanks.
You are. Thanks. I like listening to you talk.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, fuck, man. It's like how does the show make you feel? Because you work the most, like, office 9-to-5 kind of job.
Yeah, I work a 9-to-5. I work pretty much, I'm the closest to fucking Lumen that like any of us are in this room. I mean, yeah, like it's actually exactly.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
What you were saying about, like, the whole, like, corporate, like, atmosphere, like, that, like, sort those sort of themes, like, it's all, like, they hit the nail on the head. Like, it's all fucking, like, the ideas of that are very, like, plus I think they do them well.
You literally go into work and your name is William.
Yeah.
You pretty much fucking sever yourself.
It's true. Yeah.
it's so cool. And, like, I really like looking at Severance under, I cannot believe I'm about to, like, do this. I need to send this next part to Professor Powers at my school. Shout out. Published author, public professor. So I'm going to name drop him. I'm going to talk about him, what I've learned from him.
Shouts out, as always.
He's fucking goated. I'm going to send this next clip to him. But I love analyzing, not Succession, Severance under the lens of Marxist theory. And before you guys in the comments are like, hey, how come you're talking about Marx? It has nothing to do with communism. Marxist theory is literally just how is the worker and the working class represented in this piece of literature or media.
Mm-hmm.
And Severance, they hit it right on the fucking head immediately. Like, you know exactly what they're going for. I think in the first episode they bring up the work-life balance.
Yeah, they do.
Which that is such poison. That is poison, and I hate it. Like, I'm very lucky. I'm very privileged that I don't have like the like a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. I do my own thing, and I'm like afloat and like whatever. Like, I'm all good.
Well, like, you don't work in an office.
Yeah. I don't, and like. The fact of the matter is that I have a very good job and I love my job and I'm very privileged that I have my job. But in terms of like the workforce, the 9-to-5 workforce, the idea of the work-life balance is complete bullshit because you spend 40 hours a week doing something that like likely you don't fucking love it. You bring home the bacon.
Yeah.
That is like why you are doing it. And then you have Saturdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? That's not balance. That isn't balance.
Yeah.
And it's because of unions and workers and like worker strikes that we have weekends and holidays. Like, these things didn't exist until unions and workers. And when you look at Severance, like I said, they hit it right on the fucking head immediately by critiquing the work-life balance and literally creating something that, for what it's worth, you go down this fucking elevator and you come right back up and it's 5:30. But somebody worked that shift.
Yeah.
You worked it, but it wasn't you. So imagine reversing that, and every single second of your existence is working. It's horrifying. It's horror.
It's
horror. And it, like, it scares me, and it victimizes the working class, because it fucking has to. Look at where we're at in the world right now.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's, like, they are getting richer, and we are getting poorer. And I love the way that the show defends the working class, and it is kind of showing us in that last season, like, hey guys, this should be a class war. Mm-hmm. This should be a class war. No more fucking culture war. Fuck. I just think Marxist criticism is really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's very cool. Shout out Professor Powers. Thank you for teaching me about Marxist theory. I wrote about it in like 4 of your papers. So thank you.
Shouts up.
No, but I agree. Cause like, I feel like they hone in on this, like, because, okay, first, the idea of us 22, 23 years old sitting on this couch looking at you saying, like, the work-life balance is fucked up. If you are older than us, you will look at us generationally like,
well, this generation is just kind of lazy.
And then, like, the younger generation will look at us and be like, well, I guess that's what we're going for, right? And it's really this, like, double-edged sword that I've had the deep, deep pleasure, if we're talking about professors, I love my professors, like, being able to talk with professors, like, Sean has told me so much about his talks with Professor Powers, and, like, gotta meet that man. I've read his articles before Sean even took classes with him. On psychedelics.
Actually?
Yes.
That's sick as hell.
I did.
I have to tell you about it, like, yeah, some of the specifics after.
The TLDR is, like, I did a lot of research and, like, stuff on psychedelics before I took them, but I disguised them as, like classwork. Mm. Did pretty good on them. But I read a lot of his papers, but not a lot, like, 2. Of his papers before, and Sean was like, yeah, this is my professor's name, and I was like, ah, wait, I'm famous. But speaking of professors, like, I having the ability to discuss certain things like that with an older generation in a very safe place like higher education, mm-hmm, is really, really great and really, really nice. And one of my professors, Kat Balco, shout out Kat Balco, my love, I love her, she's in so many states away now, but she is like our parents' age, obviously. And like, we've had so many talks about this idea of like the hustle, quote unquote, and like this idea of like these like kind of like finance bros of our generation that are like, we need to make millions, we need to make 10 bajillion dollars.
You gotta fall in love with the grind.
You just gotta wake up at 5 a.m. and you gotta work. You gotta hustle and you don't go to bed until 5 a.m. And first, you gotta hustle.
First you wake up at 4:30 a.m., you dip your face in a bowl of ice water, you invest $6 more dollars in Trump pussy coin, and you fucking... Guys. Watch Severance.
Chill on Ashton Hall, though. He's fine.
But,
he's chill.
But, like, it's just so, like... It's so interesting to see how this idea of a work-life balance is shifting, because, like, stay with me, folks. Our parents' generation, right?
They love the work.
They love work, but that is because they were never offered an alternative. And as, like, our parents had kids and, like, all of that, like, I had, like, very old parent. Not very old, like, you don't have to decrepit. Like, but my mom's, like, 66, I'm 23. But she always had this idea of, like, you have to work, you have to have a full-time job, or you don't deserve anything. And I feel like that is generationally a very big thing of, like, if you don't work, if you don't, for lack of a better term, this is another Succession reference, but, like, sell your soul, like, you don't deserve to have a successful and happy life. And a lot of kids... kids. A lot of people that I know and, like, my friends, like, especially in school, had the same idea of, like, and, like, I went to art school. We all had this idea of, like, fuck, we're not going to get a job. And we don't deserve to then thrive in life because we're just going to be this starving artist stereotype. And then as this, like, as we go into the workforce, we've been bogged down by, like, our parents enforcing the hustle on us, or, like, even just the older generation thinking that we need to be working as hard as they are, with the fact that fucking COVID and everything else that, like, the social awkwardness of, like, coming out of that and, like, growing up in that. And, like, no one, like, everyone older than us says no one wants to work anymore. No one's hiring. We are all dead. Like, we're all...
Everything's getting more expensive and none of our wages are going up.
Yeah. Literally. And it's gotten... Like, babe, when did we start severance? Like, for the very first time? Like, months ago.
Say January? Like, end of January?
Yeah. Like, my answer, like, then was... Aside from, like, my life that I currently have, like, thinking of just, like, work. My answer then was, like, no, I wouldn't sever myself. But now I'm so tired from my job. I'm so tired from life. Fuck. I might sever myself. And, like, it's just, like, I kind of understand, like, this kind of, like, obviously I understand, like, the Marxist point of view of it. Of, mm-hmm. like, you do have to work to have the life.
Yeah.
But I also, like, it's very hard to not have, like, a very utilitarianism perspective of, like, I need to be happy or else I won't work.
Yeah.
I won't, like, function. And I feel like severance kind of just forces the question of, like, would you rather completely try to avoid the, like, emotional toll it takes to, like, discipline yourself and get up and work? Like, would you rather avoid that or, like... are you gonna go through it? Because you see, like, Dylan trying to get another job, like, yeah, while he's already at Lumen, and, like, it just kind of...
The door store.
It's so good. It's such a good
scene. So how long have you been interested?
Since I was a kid.
I think since I was five. Yeah.
No, because he goes, what age? Oh, yeah. Five. What's your favorite door? Pocket.
And then he, like, made a joke about doors, and the employer got pissed.
Well, no, he, yeah.
He said, and then he said he was severed, and then he was like, get the fuck out of here.
But, like, that scene specifically is, like, there's no scenes in Severance that don't have a reason to be there. And, yeah, like, I feel like that scene just kind of serves to, like, illustrate the fact that, like, you can have a job that's killing you, and then you just have to find another one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this gray and brown fucking boring-ass door place. And, like, the thing I find so interesting about Severance is, like, they got rid of doors, you know? Like, yeah, it's this weird parallel that I don't really know what it means yet, but again, severance is very meaningful. I feel like that has something to do with something.
Yeah.
But it's just this idea of, like, Dylan tried to get another job, and it sucked the soul out of him to even go through it. And as soon as he said one thing about, like, he has a little chip in his brain, he was like, fuck no. And I think, like, call me insane for making this parallel, but I think that that's just kind of like a nod to, like...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
You can get a job interview, you can be going so well, but as soon as they find one itty-bitty thing wrong, fuck no.
Yeah,
like, I'm convinced I didn't get a job at a flower shop because I was like, I don't have my own reliable transportation, I can't afford a car. And they never called me back. They completely ignored me. And it's so hard to get a job when you have one itty-bitty thing wrong.
Yeah. True.
And Severance just kind of like super highlights that. Because even when Mark like was trying to reintegrate, he couldn't even work his job.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like any Mark didn't even get time to be alive. So I just think like Severance just does such a complexly excellent job at just like being like so meta. Because like also if you want to work on a show like Severance, you have to sell your fucking soul. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna have to sever yourself, essentially, for lack of a better phrasing, because the world of production fucking sucks and it's cutthroat and they want you to die. Like, coming from someone who studied production, if you get into production, they want you to die. And, like, it's just such a complicated thing, because I'm like, because I think you were saying, babe, the other day that, like, you're almost jealous of Severance sometimes, because, like, how do they do something so like that? You know what I mean?
I get that.
And I feel like that's just a testament to, like, how complex they bring up certain issues. And, like, I also feel jealous at times, because then I'm like, I know I can make that, but no one's gonna then produce it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just so crazy that the idea for Severance and everything that happens in Severance is really simple. Main character, grief-stricken. If he can take away 8 hours of 5 days of his week, he's gonna do it. Dylan feels like a loser. If he can take out 8 hours of 5 days of his week, he's gonna do it. These are all intrinsically very simple ideas, but the means of which that they execute them are so, it's so multi-layered and fucking fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to ask, like, what your guys' favorite episodes are, like, specifically, if you don't remember, like, the exact number, then you're just like, whatever.
Mine, or actually, were you gonna...
No, go ahead.
Okay. Mine was, season two, because I'm between two right now, but I'm gonna say right now that it's episode 7 of season 2 was my favorite.
Yeah.
It's...
It's so good. Because,
like, I mean, you guys know which two it's...
Yeah, parts of it were actually filmed at... Nassau.
Really?
Yeah, I think in the library.
Huh.
Yeah, when Mark and Jim were... Yeah, that was Nassau.
Wow.
Shout out.
Yes. Shouts out, as always, to Nassau. But yeah, that was... Because, I mean, obviously, I liked seeing, like, what Mark and Gemma were up to before, like, everything with Lumen or whatever. Like, I liked seeing that, obviously, and...
But it wasn't even before Lumen.
You know what I mean. Before...
Yeah.
Before all of it happened.
And the way that episode is shot is fucking beautiful,
blanking
man.
On the director's name, but...
As far as I know, she, like, that was her first time directing a major episode.
Last night, which is, let's, like...
Yeah, can you get a fact check on that,
babe? Well, that is true. I just want to find her name.
She's that episode is so fascinating, because, like, you see, like, the compilation of Mark and Gemma, like, being happy, and it is so, like, the film grain, the warmth, the saturation.
It was shot. Yeah.
Fucking gorgeous, and it perfectly encapsulates how happy they were before Lumen completely fucked them over.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to, like, I feel like season 3 will give us an episode of why and how they did that. Why was Gemma chosen? Which I have a theory about that I came up with last night because I was stoned, but I'll put a pin in it for now. But yeah, episode 7 of season 2 is fucking fascinating. My favorite is still Woe's Hollow, episode 4. Fucking incredible from start to finish. I remember watching it weekly, and it starting with just... just Irving in the middle of this icy fucking, like, snowy lake.
What is this show even about, bro?
Episode 3, they didn't fucking lead into that at all. Like, it was something that just happened. It was so cool. And I was, like, thinking recently, I was like, okay, what the fuck did the Audis, like, sign up for? Were they aware of exactly what was good, like, what was up with, like, this forest and everything? And what happened after the Glasgow block got let down? Like, what about the other innies? Did they get turned into their Audis? Did their... That episode made me think a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Helly was secretly Helena the entire time is very gut-wrenching.
Yeah, that was...
It's kind of fucking insane. And a point that I had that I was talking about with Shell the other day is that I almost have a problem with it, because like I was saying at the beginning of the episode, Helly was the driving force of season 1.
Yeah.
So you
inadvertently
remove her from the first 4 episodes, And then from 5 to 10, she isn't given a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like... Because she's so good at being, like, the centralizing figure of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a little sad that she didn't get to, like, be that again. But mm-hmm. I think we're heading for that again, which is really cool, given how season 2 ends. Which, that's a conversation in and of itself. Are you guys frustrated? Are you guys happy? What the fuck are you thinking? Especially you, because you just watched it.
Yeah, I you can't start with... Oh, I gotta think about it for a second. You can't...
Because, like...
You can't start with me.
Initially, I was very frustrated. I was very frustrated. Because I was like, fuck, took like 16 episodes for... Oh, no, 19 episodes mm-hmm. for us to get Gemma out of this building. Like, the viewer in me was like, finish line, finish line, finish line. Here we go. Oh, we're right there, right there. Ah, you fucking bitch. Yeah,
the 1 yard line.
Fucker. You fucker. But then I realized thematically, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
He was never going to leave the building. He was so obviously sold on the fact that Audi Mark maybe, like, wasn't fully lying to him, but he definitely didn't think he was going to exist.
The conversation still, like, put him off, like, he was not going to...
So I can't blame any Mark at all for making that choice, and it's beautiful seeing two innies make a... decision fully for themselves, and I do not think it was Helena at the end whatsoever. I think it was just as much Helly as, like, any Helly. Helly made her decision the same way Mark made her decision. If Mark was going to run away with Helly, Helly wasn't going to be like, no, Mark, go for your Audi.
Yeah.
No! They want to live! They want to live together! So, of course, they're going to fucking choose each other, and it's beautiful, because it feels like the first time in the entire show that they had a choice.
Yeah,
and they fucking did it, and they did it for themselves, and I love it. And the only thing that I'll see eye to eye on with people who are like, oh, who's Helena at the end? The look that she gave Gemma as they were turning... the curve of the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
It looked a little malicious at first. I was like, why does she have that look in her eyes? And then I realized it's just pity. It's just pity.
Mm.
There's nothing more to it. I don't think it was evil at all. I don't think it was antagonistic. She felt bad for her. That's what I think that look was for. If you go back and watch it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I'm very happy with the ending, and I'm very excited for the next season. And who knows if there's going to be more Severance after that. Who the fuck? We could very well be 30 years old watching Severance still.
I don't know. I feel, because I do agree with what you said. I feel like I don't know where you go after, like a third.
What do you honestly. Do? Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah. So, I don't think you even said your favorite episode. I think
we
moved.
Forgore.
I've got skipped over.
Oh, go back.
But I was going to say, from minutes ago, the creator is Dan Erickson, and the cinematographer is Jessica Lee Gange. It's a French last name. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Jessica Lee, if you're watching this, because we know you're watching, we know you're a fan of the show, shout out. We'd love to have you on.
But my favorite episode is season 2, episode 9, simply because it was just, like, it made me cry the whole time. It was just this emotional, like emotional throw up the entire time.
Yeah, they really fucking just hit Dylan. You with, like, out of fucking nowhere. It's not out of nowhere, but, like, you know what I mean.
It was from somewhere, but it was still out of nowhere. Mm. I think I was just screaming at, oh no, what's his name? Zoolander.
Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
I just kept going, Ben Stiller, you fuck! And then people got mad at me in my TikTok comments. And they were like, well, actually, Dan Erickson did it. And I was like, I don't want to get mad at him. He's a genius. I can get mad at Zoolander.
Yeah, it's funny getting mad at Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In that episode, you have fucking Dylan and Gretchen and Irving not being able to get with Bert. It's so fucking gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
Continue.
Oh. No, yeah. Like that. Yeah, that's exactly why I was going to say it was... there's just something about it that, like, it begs the question of, like, one, does love transcend Severance? Two, was Gretchen actually cheating on Audi Dylan?
Cheating's a weird word for it.
Which, it's like, fucked up. I don't want to, like, go, I don't want to talk too much again, but maybe it could be for a different time or something, or I could save it for my brain soup, but, like, it just begs a lot of questions, but I do think, Helena I do think it was, I think it was Helly in the beginning of the episode, and then when she went back down and up the elevator after Jame Egan, like her dad, was like in the weird doorway scene. Because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, chat, but I think she went, Helly went back down the elevator and then went back up, and then after Mark came up, she came up and like hugged him. I think that's how it went. Yes, it was how it went. I'm correct. But I think Helena came back up, and it was Helly in the beginning, but I think Helena came back up because just the sentiment of Irving saying during the Woes Hollow episode that Helly was never cruel. Mm-hmm. I think that holds such a testament because I feel like, yes, Helly would have kind of had this moment of like choosing like herself over like what was right. But I also think that like Helena, if it was Helena, I think she did a damn fine job of pretending that she was Helly. And I think ultimately she chose to be selfish because the point of Helly was never cruel. I think if Helly was in that situation, one, she wouldn't have looked at Gemma like that. Two, she like, I don't think she would have ran away with Mark. I think she would have interacted with Gemma at the very least.
Mm. I don't think so.
But I just, like, my biggest point of it is Helly was never cruel, and Helly or Helena, whoever Britt Lauer was at the end where she gave that look to Gemma, that was cruel.
Yeah.
Like, you said it was pity. I don't think it was pity. I think it was cruelty. Because, like, as someone who's, like, I've been given that look in a similar context before in my ute. Like, this look of, like, choose one or the other, and I got chosen, and I'm looking at the other person, and vice versa. And, like, it just gave me this feeling of, like, I fucking won, bitch. Because, like, the thing is, like, Gemma will be fine. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She knows her house. What? Or did he move?
He lives in a severed neighborhood. Or, like, severance housing.
But even housing. Still, yeah. Like, I feel like Gemma doesn't inherently need Mark to be fine on the outside. So I think Gemma will be fine, and I think that's what Helly was considering, or Helena. Because, again, I think if it was Helly, I don't think she would have been cruel.
I would just be really unimpressed with the writers if they were like, gotcha, Mark! Again! Da-da-da-da-da-da. Quite literally, my problem would be, why again? You just did this. That's why I don't think it's her. Also, from like a writing perspective, these people are smart, and there's nothing smart about doing what you just did again.
Well, I feel like there is, because the first time they did it, it didn't come to fruition, really. Like, Helly's goal...
There was no, like, logical... Like, they didn't expect Irving to almost fucking kill her. Like, there would have been a conclusion if, like, nothing had...
Exactly.
She's a fucking, like, Egan!
Like, Helena's goal with doing that was to fuck Mark and to be close with him. But she didn't realize that Irving would, like, figure her out and everything. So I feel like a very interesting and smart way to kind of open season 3 would to be reveal, like, yeah, that was Helly in the beginning. Jame, like, was like, no, this is the final day of Cold Harbor. I want my daughter in this room. Put her back up there. Helena had to pretend her very best, and now season 3 opens with Helena and Mark trying to figure it the fuck out, and I think Helena will figure out a way, because she can get up to the severed floor without getting severed. I feel like Helena will find a way to get Mark down without him being severed, and it will be... But he would still... You know what I mean? Like, he would sever on the way down, but, like, she can get him up... Normal Mark.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
You know what I mean? So I think she's going to try to convince... I don't know. My favorite argument, though, is the, like, Dylan-Gretchen thing. But again, I don't want to keep rambling.
Which is
fucking, we love Severance.
Yeah. It's
Mr. Milchick. How have we not mentioned him yet?
Well, we brought him up quickly in the beginning. Yeah.
He's like, what a fucking goat, dude. Like, Tramell Tillman.
Yes.
I got that.
I gotta follow him on Instagram now because I was scared for spoilers.
I hope he does not get typecast. He's in the new Mission Impossible and he looks like Mr. Milchick. He sounds like Mr. Milchick and he Milchick. My God, Tramell Tillman. Like in season one, there wasn't that much of a reason to like him until he was silly for the dance party.
Yeah.
But you know, after that, like as the show progresses and you see like you kind of get little like sprinkles of context as to why he is the way he is. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to navigate this next part very, very gently because I am white, but Mr. Milchick is a very strong, like, character of like how horrifying it is to not be white in a white dominated workforce.
Mm.
Like the way they virtue signaled to him with like the reimagined canon Keir Egan and all the Egans being black, like that's completely fucking insane.
Yeah,
there's no justifying that.
It was either Miss Huang or the assistant girl that he was talking to about like Natalie? You're right. It was Natalie. Like oh, like how did you feel when they gave you your version? Yeah,
didn't even fucking answer.
I think that is like strong evidence that he's gonna have a redemption arc. Like that's like
I feel it.
Talking to fucking what's his name, Mr. Drummond.
Yeah,
with that scene that they have together.
Yes. Oh my God. Oh, the way he stood up for himself.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so fucking cool. Eat shit, Mr. Drummond.
Yeah.
His severed crew is like a bunch of fuck ups and they keep making him look bad. You still need to respect the man. Yeah, he's still like the fucking director of the severed floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they treat him is awful. Like, granted, he's not a great guy.
No, but
he's within his rights to demand respect.
Yeah.
And that scene, devour feculence. Mr. Milchick is my favorite character. He pretty much became it, like, overnight. Like, mine was, my favorite was Irving, and he's right there. He's, like, number two. He's a solid fucking spark plug number two. I love Irving. But Mr. Milchick, man, and his ass is so fat. Shout out to Tramell Tillman if you're watching
If you're watching, because we know you're watching, know you're a fan of the show. We'll fly you out. We'll pay for all the.
He does not need us for
all the travel. We would love to have you on.
But he's great. He's great. Do we have any least favorite characters?
I don't know.
Rickon.
Probably Rickon.
Well, Rickon's my funny answer. If I had to give a real answer, probably the dentist or like doctor or whatever.
Oh my God.
That guy.
That guy is, I have such a fucking hate boner for him. Like that's why he's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's fucking there.
Yeah.
Who else didn't I like? Yo. Obviously Mr. Drummond, because he's like a huge fucking like psycho.
The way he went out.
Oh my fucking. That is
fucking like if I like try to think of different scenarios that could like happen with the idea of just Severance as a whole, like I could never come up with that. That is fucking genius.
That was one of the most creative deaths I've seen in media in a very long time. Yeah, that was really that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to be said about violence and the finale of the show.
Yeah.
Severance did not have a lot of
violence. Not a lot of it.
He had a couple big outbursts here and there, and I guess Helly tried to kill herself. That was pretty violent. In a sense, violent. You know what I mean?
But like,
there was no blood.
Yeah,
yeah.
The last episode was the first time we saw blood.
Most violent was
bit Milchick.
Lunged at him. Like that's like the most we'd seen up to that point.
I remember, like, fresh off the coattails of the finale for the first time when it aired, I was talking with Shell about it, and I was like, this show did not have a lot of violence in it, so when we saw it, I was really fucking taken aback.
Yeah.
In a way, in a very, like, I don't know how to describe it, but in a very full circle way, the show does kind of criticize violence on television, because the violence that we see in the finale isn't that bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's bad.
Compared to everything else in the show, yeah.
But, like, shit, like, you kind of... When you remove, like... I'm not removing anything. Hold on, what the fuck am I trying to say here? But, like, when you are watching the show and then you get to the finale, you see all this blood and all this, like, gratuitous fucking violence, it takes you out of it. Like, holy shit, like, this is awful.
Yeah.
And then you think about everything else you consume, all the other movies and TV you watch, and it's like, I'm really desensitized.
Yeah.
Which is something that I hope they snuck in there, because that's how I took it.
That's interesting. That's like...
Fuck Mr. Drummond, though. He deserved that.
True. That's true. That's
such an asshole. What do you
His
say
tattoo
about...
tattoo was so good, though.
Oh, that's true. Also, yeah. The way he... When he walked into the goat-killing room.
Yeah.
And the way he said, has it verve.
Yeah.
Has it wiles. Talk fucking normally. Don't get mad at Milchick for using big words when you talk like, has it wiles. What do you mean? Such an asshole.
That's the thing. I know it's like so detailed, but like I had to look up the four like tempers of them because I didn't want to mess them up.
Yeah. Frolic, woe, what the fuck
Malice
is it?
Malice and dread.
Yeah.
But I find it so interesting that Mr. Drummond had frolic.
He had frolic.
Because I feel like
Why?
I don't know if like I'm on the ball with this or like slightly off, but I feel like Mr. Milchick, Miss Wong, Natalie, and Drummond all kind of represented like the four temperaments in their own way, and like I feel like I'm missing the mark because Marquez. Mr. Drummond had because Mr. Drummond had frolic tattooed, but like just in the fact of like in the last couple episodes we saw Milchick saying like kind of like chanting at himself like grow up. And he, like, made Miss Wong, like, kind of, like, slam her toy.
The water, like, ring game.
Yeah. And I would say that Mr. Milchick represents, like, frolic the most. But he, like, also is kind of, like, taking that away from Miss Wong. And I just find it, like, so interesting because I feel like on the severed floor, like, the only tempers that are felt or experienced are woe, frolic, dread, malice. And, like, because they all, like, have... Like, they're all broad things.
Yeah.
So I feel like they all pertain to, like, each thing. And, like, whenever each innie feels something besides the four tempers, it kind of, like, goes wrong for them. And I feel like that's such, like, again, like, the show is so layered. And I think it's so interesting to, like just tap into, like... Because, like, there's even, like, Cobell in the fact that this was all her design. Like, I don't think that the show is just going to be three seasons, because they set up a lot.
There's a lot
here. Yeah.
Also, stuff with, like... I know this is, like, such a random poll, but, like, also, like, Petey and stuff. Like,
yeah,
isn't there still, like, a little bit more there that, like, we could kind of, like, grab onto?
They did kind of, like, half-ass Marx reintegrate. Like, they didn't... ever really finish.
They did the first part with the vibrating salt.
Yeah.
And then she flooded the chip, but there's still like a third stage, like the last step to fully reintegrate.
Whatever her name is left before
Rigabi.
Rigabi, that's right.
Dr. Rigabi. I have this is like such an insane connection that I'm making, but it goes back to Professor Powers at my school. Hey,
shouts out, as always.
This is my last, like, specific thing and, like, completely random connection I want to make between Severance and another piece of literature. I think it was last semester he had us read, Dr. Powers had us read this short story that I'm forgetting what it's called, but not really important. And the focal point of it is that there's this old man. He's not old, but he's towards, like, the latter half of his life. He's in, like, his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like nobody. He's mentally just like not there, and he's like a fucked up individual. And he learns that he is gay. Pretty cool. And he literally learns that he's gay, and he has sex with his coworker.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the story, he like once he. once he comes, he kind of like all those decades of life that he missed out on manifest, and he can only, like, his last thing in this short story is he's trying to speak, but it only comes out as growls. And that's kind of what Milchick does when he's telling himself to grow up.
Yeah.
He starts, like, with a full sentence, and then a shorter sentence, and then grow up.
Yeah.
Grow up. Grow.
Even when he's, even, like, in the finale, when he's, like, trying to get them to let him out. Like, he's, like, running, like, kicking the door or whatever. And then, like, he's fully, like, moving back and jump and, like, elbow or shouldering the door or whatever.
It's this, like, animalistic, like...
And the way he, like, jumps up on the fucking thing after. Yes, and he,
like, it's so fucking cool. But it, like Milchick and this guy from the short story I read...
are the same guy.
they, like, tap into this weird catharsis of, like, an animalistic growl that I don't know what it means because I'm still not that good at analyzing stuff. I'm just here to talk about it and make connections.
That's true. I thought
that was really cool. Piece of literature that was from decades ago that has absolutely nothing to do with Severance and it says one little detail that I thought was kind of cool.
That's
my final, like, specific point on the show, but everything the show touches on between, like, the work-life balance and, like, post-capitalism and means of coping with grief, it is all so beautiful. And if you have any interest or relation to any of these characters or ideas, do yourself a favor and fucking watch it, please.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Again, I don't want to keep rambling. I don't know how long we've been going. I feel like I talked too much this episode.
That's
so.
Not true. That was my any. I don't know what that was.
Oh, right. We can go through our letterbox.
Yes. Folder. Yeah. We had.
Yeah. Before we go, we're gonna give you guys a little look at our Letterbox top four and kind of get a glimpse into what we like, maybe what we don't like, but especially what we like, because, you know, you're watching a show about people talking about movies and TV, you might as well get an idea of what they're into.
What we like.
Billy, go ahead.
No.
All right, I'll go first. you can follow me on Letterbox at KelpoGrits54, and my Letterbox top four is in no specific order really, except for number one. There's Fallen Angels. I do want to get the director's name correct because I don't want to be insulting.
Why am
Is
I?
Is it Wong Kar-wai? Wong Kar-wai. Fucking incredible movie from the mid-90s.
Mm.
It's such a weird melting pot of a movie because you have the noir aesthetic and you have themes of grief, loss, and love all coupled up into this just weirdly directed, flashy, gloomy, just beautiful fucking film that I think everybody needs to see.
Mm-hmm.
I also have Interstellar, which is definitely my number one, like, everybody loves movie. Like, everybody who's seen Interstellar loves Interstellar.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's a fucking contrarian with that movie unless you're a fat dork.
True.
Fuck you.
That's true.
Interstellar literally just gives me meaning to live.
Yeah.
Every time I watch it, it makes me want to keep living.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it because of that. It's incredible how much of an odyssey this movie is. Like, it is 169 minutes, and that's including the credits. So take away the credits, and you have, like, the first 45 to 50 minutes of this movie take place fully on Earth and set the tone and story for the rest of the movie. And, like, fuck, for the entire... You've seen it, right?
Yes.
Are you Mad Maxing me?
No, I have seen it. I promise.
And for the entire rest of the runtime, it just feels like this never-ending odyssey epic through space and touching on themes of love being the fourth dimension. Fifth dimension. Which I think is kind of a horseshoe theory. Low IQ, love is the fifth dimension. High IQ, love is the fifth dimension. Don't question me on that. It just makes sense to me. Next is Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. I have nothing to say about this that hasn't been said already. Watch Twin Peaks. Watch the movie. Watch season 3. It changed my life.
Yeah.
It will probably change yours. And my number one pick... And I'm really glad that last year it wasn't proved as recency bias because I still love it just the same. But I can say pretty confidently right now that my number one favorite and most important movie to me right now is Dune Part 2. I think if you added one more second to that movie, it wouldn't be as good. If you took away one one less second from that movie, it wouldn't be as good. Yeah. It is truthfully, word for word, second for second, shot for shot.
Wordsworthian.
Wordsworthian, emotions just recollected in tranquility. It is perfect. I have nothing to say. I'm jealous that I will never make something as good as it. It is perfect. A movie is allowed to have some fluff and some fat and some room to breathe, but Dune is literally a fucking roller coaster of perfection from start to finish. Mm-hmm. Watch part one. It might seem boring. It's not. You're just lame and you have a TikTok blame. Blah, 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 blah. Watch the first one. Watch the second one. I love Dune. Thank you.
That's true. That's facts.
Who's going next?
Oh, Billy, do you want to go next?
Okay, all right. I don't have as much to say about mine. Mine are in order, so I'll go from 4 to 1. Number 4, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this or heard of this one. It's called Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. Yeah, same thing. I can't say anything hasn't already been said. Watch Twin Peaks, and then watch it again.
Yeah.
Number 3, The Lighthouse.
Fucking awesome.
I'll always say I am Robert Eggers' strongest soldier. I will be there day one for every movie.
We gotta rewatch The Northman.
We do. Yeah. We do have to rewatch The Northman. And we have to watch The Witch also. Number 2, City of God. I watched that one last year.
So
I was
good.
Like, it's so funny because I was literally just like looking for a random movie to watch too. It wasn't even like I like had heard of it beforehand or all. I was just fucking browsing Amazon. I thought, oh, this looks good.
That's a and movie that like, also feels like an odyssey to me. Like so just much.
One
happens.
Of the best things I've ever seen.
It's so good.
And my number 1 pick, which is like, I kind of hold it in a... It's still my favorite, but I kind of hold it in a different regard from everything else I just said. My favorite of all time is Singing in the Rain from 1952. It's just like... It's the movie where, like, it's perfect. I wouldn't change a thing. And it just cheers me up every single time. Like, no matter what. Like, literally the lowest point in my life. And it'll just, like... It'll fix it. So, yeah, that's... Like, I kind of have to.
Yeah.
Not much I can say there.
Can we sing or do we get copyright? Let's do 2 seconds worth of
singing in the rain. Okay. we sped it up there, so we're fine at the end.
Exactly. Updated
yours?
Yeah.
Oh, you changed yours? I didn't see that.
I don't know if they're in order. I don't care enough to explain if they are or not. But because my bio says so, I'm a Mad Max fan account.
That's true.
And I just tell my zero fans if a movie is like Mad Max or not, and then I review it. So my 4th is Mad Max Fury Road. It's
bonkers. It's banana pants.
I love Mad Max Fury Road. I watch it driving. To go to bed. It is. It's every single second of it is absolutely perfect.
It's also kind of like Dune in that way. Like you tack on an extra second or you take away a second, it's not as good.
Yeah, I agree.
But my difference is if they made it 10 hours longer, I would still watch it. It would be perfect.
That
I love
is
Mad
true.
Max. Just make the road longer.
Truth, man.
Want more of it.
Fury Highway.
You know, I'll save my actual favorite movie for last. And then I have in my little second spot, Everything Everywhere All at Once. I know that was like, it was like a big... Like, whoa, when it came out.
Whoa.
But, like, same thing with, like, recency bias. I just think I keep that movie in my top 4 because I think it's so spectacular. And it really got me through school, not in its content because it made me sad. And I can't think about it too hard without sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on.
just start thinking about it.
Yeah. But I keep it in my top 4, and I think about it often because it really got me through school because it was edited fully on Premiere Pro.
Wait, actually?
Yeah.
That's sick as hell. We use that.
Type shit.
And when I was going through school, I majored in integrated media arts, so I used Premiere Pro multiple hours all the time every day for 4 years. And it just gave me the, like, oomph of like, fuck, I gotta keep going. Mm-hmm. I gotta keep going. If they can make shit like this on this, I could keep doing the damn fucking thing. And in a similar vein of like deeply inspired me, it's a short film. It's 20 minutes. Asparagus by Suzanne Pitt. I think it's Suzanne. I don't care. Well, it says Susan, but Susan. Other places say Suzanne. I don't know. But this video specifically opened, or David Lynch asked for it to open every showing of Eraserhead, when it was in theaters. So it close ties to David Lynch, but I simply saw this once. I think my old professor Dakota Nanton showed it to me. Name dropping in full because he's the coolest.
Shouts out.
Of course. But this it's a big ol' symbol. It's a 20-minute symbolism for fucking. And if you don't know anything about me and my art is a 20-minute symbolism for fucking.
That's true. That's
like every way that like genitalia and like phallic and yonic symbols are like illustrated in this film. It's all like stop motion, all like hand drawn, yada yada. It just like I just started painting that way and I didn't stop until I graduated and I still do, and it just like I don't even know what it means to me quite yet, but it meant something very large and it made my entire thesis. Like my thesis show was called Orgy X Massacre, so
awesome.
All because of Stan Pitt.
That was then, a sick ass show. That was, oh my god, thanks. That was great.
Thanks. I have a website, shellrose.myportfolio, if you want to see it. Anyways. And then my favorite movie ever in the entire world ever is The Doom Generation by Gregor Rocky.
The Doom Generation?
The Doom Generation by Gregor Rocky.
The Uncle June Generation?
Yeah. This movie...
me on the fucking TV.
This movie is like a triplet with Nowhere and Totally Fucked Up, also by Gregor Rocky, obviously.
Yes.
But Doom Generation itself is just... perfect. Mm-hmm. No notes, perfect.
Can I get an order of barbecue beef chunks?
Yeah, that'll be $6.66.
So nasty.
Sunshine! Yeah, but I love it. I've watched it a bajillion times. My professor still hasn't forgiven himself for telling me about it, because he was traumatized by it, and I became deeply, deeply obsessed with it, to the point where I made him sit with me and figure out how to code a song from the Doom Generation into my VR piece, and he almost lost his fucking mind because he was sick of the Doom Generation at that fucking point. But I'll never get sick of it. My favorite version is the full uncut version on Criterion, but you gotta pay money for that, and that fucking sucks.
I'll send you guys my login.
Shout out to Criterion.
Do you actually have a Criterion account?
Yeah.
Send me your login.
Man, we like a whole lot of different stuff here. Like, genre-wise, I'm like a Swiss Army knife. I'll watch and enjoy pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Except, like, I wasn't raised on, like... I promise this is not me trying to sound pretentious. It was literally the way I was raised. But, like, I wasn't really raised on, like, corny, like, B-movies. Like, give me some. Give me some as an example. I'm totally fucking blanking.
Did you say the B-movie?
No, like, B-movies. Like, you know, they're like, eh, they're like, eh. Like corny,
but like, are you talking like slashers? Like
no, like
kind cult of in, classics.
No, kind of like in the range of like Grown Ups, Dodgeball.
Oh, like, okay, like comedies. You know,
you're talking, comedy,
like, dude, like
yes, I can't describe the genre that I don't really fuck with, because like
it's comedy.
No, because we're watching Final Destination, and that's like those are considered like B movies.
And kitschy movies.
Yes. I wasn't raised on those, so I find it hard to like thoroughly enjoy them now, but literally everything else,
mm-hmm.
I'm fully dialed in and like locked in, and I will find something to love in everything. So,
yeah.
Yeah. There's a big thing of like, because like I grew up on like, obviously I went to art school, I wanted to be an artist forever, blah. But like there's like I was raised on like artistic media, yada yada, but like I was also raised on like Final Destination and like Halloween Town were my like two favorites as a wee.
Mm.
I watched that back in October. It was pretty good.
I love Halloween Town. Freaked me the fuck out. Traumatized me as a child. When Marnie has to save her mom and her grandma and they're like frozen. Scariest thing ever. Yeah,
type shit.
Sorry, spoilers for Halloween Town, but I think there's. Like, going through 3 years of TAing art school, there's something to be said for, like, there are kitschy, silly, funny movies that are made to be, to get a laugh, to, like, get a ha-ha, to make someone feel good. They're feel-good movies. Yeah, I think that's a better word. Like, feel-good movies instead of, like, B-movies. Mm. And they have, it's the same kind of horseshoe thing, and they have as much validity as, like, the more artistic movies, the more, like, thought-through, whatever, like, complex, like, metaphorical movies.
Grown-ups versus Eraserhead. Which literally. One are you guys taking?
One of those is half a star and one of those is 5 stars.
It's up to you guys to find out which.
I like the one where they pee at the water park more.
But it's literally like...
Oh, Eraserhead.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally like Grown-ups and Eraserhead in my brain going through 4 years of boot camp art school. Like... In my mind, they have the same validity. Like, in my mind, they're both 5... Well, let me not use Grown-ups, because that's not, like, not my favorite one. But, like, let's use the Waterboy Adam Sandler. Let's use the Waterboy Adam Sandler and Uncut Gems Adam Sandler. Those two movies are both 5 equal stars to me, because one... Like, the definition of art is if it makes someone feel something.
Yeah.
And... Waterboy Adam Sandler makes me feel all the emotions.
I love Waterboy, definitely more than Happy Gilmore.
Mm. I love Happy Gilmore. Don't talk to me about Happy Gilmore.
No, I liked Happy Gilmore, but Waterboy was fucking amazing.
But, like, even all of them, like, they hold such a special place in my heart. Maybe because I grew up with them, but because they are made to feel good. They're made to make you feel warm. The message getting across is usually something surface level that you can learn in an elementary school.
Don't judge someone by the way they look or sound.
Exactly. And, like, I feel like that has the same validity as, like, Uncut Gems, this, like, heavily produced, like, highly edited, like, absolute master fucking piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because they both make people feel extreme ways. Whereas, like... I can't really think, like, literally, I always quote Billy's Letterboxd bio of, like, I'd rather like a movie than not.
Yeah.
But, like, I can't even think of any movies, like, a lot of action movies will, like, fall flat for me where, like, they don't make me feel something. I just think that they're cool. Good job.
Yeah.
Like, you jumped over a car. Nice.
Sick. Yeah, I like, couldn't
do that. Like, that car flew. Okay, you ran fast. Ah! But, like, that's where Mad Max differs for me, where it's, like, it made me feel something so deep in my soul with the color grading and, like, so inspired of, like, they took something action-y, and obviously very campy from the 80s, whatever, but they took something action-y, made it something more. There was feeling in every second.
Yeah.
There's the story of, like, a Morton Joe needs to get his prized birthers back, you know? And, like, there's the story of, like, Furiosa needs to find the green place of many mothers. It doesn't exist.
Mm.
And, like, the emotions, spoilers. Literally, the emotions aren't like, I'm not sobbing. Do I cry during Mad Max? Yes. But I'm not sobbing. But it has the same validity of like, something like, like Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me.
Even. Yeah.
But like, that's where like, I'll see like, oops, I'm sorry, this is controversial, where like, Alien sometimes. I'm like, okay, Alien. The name... I expected what they met my expectations. I saw an alien.
There was an alien in that movie, famously.
Exactly. And like certain sci-fi stuff like that, and like, oh, to bring it back to Severance, sci-fi, nice. Ooh, nice.
Tie back.
But like, normally I wouldn't like a sci-fi show. Like, me and Sean have been talking about the fact that I don't like Star Wars. Sorry, I don't like Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting on the couch with two people that really like Star Wars, and I've watched Star Wars, but like, it's just the fact of like, I get it. You know, it's the space and the thing, and they fight, and it's the war.
You will not take her from me!
And, like, unfortunately, I get it. But, like, when I was a kid, I loved Star Trek because there was something more. I fell in love with the characters.
Yeah.
Everything was more like. You could kind of, like, second guess everything, but Star Wars is more like good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, but you know? It's more like
I do think, like, there is also like a lot. There is like if you're willing to, there too. Is stuff to like sink your teeth into. It's not entirely like yeah.
Like I'm giving Star Wars another chance, guys. Don't even worry. But it's just like and this is me in my opinions, but like sometimes certain things will fall short for me in terms of like I wish the thought was more than the production, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's why my top four are my top four, because, like, that's where it comes into. And I consider editing as part of thought, because I studied editing, so maybe I'm biased. But, like, action movies are at this bottom of the horseshoe where I'm like, they care about the explosions, they care about the... And, like,
Wario.
I'll even, like, unfortunately, like, let's take a movie that I really like. Let's put Long Legs with Nicolas Cage in that bottom where, like...
Fire-ass movie.
Such a great movie, but I feel like the biggest point of it was to be like, ah, fuck! And I didn't... Like, I'm not sitting here thinking, like, Long Legs, wow. But, like, I am sitting here every day thinking Mad Max, wow.
Mm.
Fucking, like... what other movie did
Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain. Wow. But like even like Planet of the Apes. Wow. Like I fell in love with it. I didn't expect to.
I know.
Because it's not just like an action sci-fi like ooh monkey la la la.
It's all
like,
heart.
It's all just like it's just it, I love a movie that begs a question and. Like, most action movies don't beg a question. Most sci-fi movies don't really beg a question unless it's like,
do aliens exist?
Probably. I don't know. But like,
hey, Mom, there's something in the back room.
Okay.
But
I don't know
I think
what song that was.
Aliens Exist by Blink-182.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I think there's just something to be said for like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes or the Planet of the Apes in the whole begs the question of, do you think you can be friends with the monkeys? And my Hell letterbox yeah. was, I would be friends, I can communicate, I can do it. And that's why I fell in love with the movies, because I was like, I'm here.
You see yourself in
I'm it. Doing it. And like, my experience with Star Wars is like, it doesn't ask me a question. If a big spaceman in a suit that was my father, okay. If I had a big sword of light, and like I'm not trying to diminish it, I just literally can't remember plot points. If I had a big lightsaber, okay. Like there's nothing I can like Star Trek was so almost human where I'm like, I can be a Star Trek. I can get in, I can be like, I'm Spock's best friend and I could be in the spaceship. You know, I can see myself in it, I can see myself in Severance, I can see myself in Succession, I can see myself in all of these things.
I hope you don't see yourself in Succession.
Well, I could see myself in Succession and like in like the analogy I made with like
Shiv.
Being a daughter, yeah. you know, and like that feeling of like the very feminine daughter feeling of like you are expected to be stronger than all of the men around you and the woman that birthed you and everyone else, but also all of the men around you will make you feel like shit all of the time, and the woman who birthed you or the man that helped give birth to you will make you feel like shit all of the time.
Fuck off.
Fuck off.
I could see myself in Succession as like in the background, like maybe like a guy like getting something out like a hot dog cart. I could like
I
pretty
could
much
see
just Greg. Yeah. Yeah,
you,
honestly.
I could see you accidentally getting slapped in the face by a Tom Wamgan.
Oh, dude, I wish.
You want to go on your government assigned what you like, what you don't like movie, film,
oh.
genre tangent?
I mean, I'm pretty much the same as you. I'll watch anything. Like, and it's like exactly what Michelle said, like that's just my entire like MO when it comes to like movies and rating things is like, unless it's like offensively bad, like I'd just rather like it. So I'll usually just like focus on what I like and just kind of ignore whatever I didn't. And yeah, maybe it's not like the best or the most succinct way of reviewing stuff.
No, it's
but
based.
Like,
it's just
whatever.
The like, based enjoyer.
I'm fucking literally yeah. The enjoyer. That's literally me.
Like Billy, have you even rated anything? Like, what's your lowest rated thing on Letterboxd?
I believe four movies rated
Let's
half star.
Let's see, and then we'll get the fuck out of here.
Three. I have three rated half star. Hold on, I have to see where you can like pull them all up.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Oh no, guys!
I have three.
Seven. I have three half stars, and one is one I didn't even watch because one of them's the Minecraft movie.
Real. Yeah. Most of these are things I watch with Eric.
Okay, one of them is. I have one real movie that I have rated a half one star, which is Doom Annihilation. It's just not. I don't even want to talk about it. But yeah, one is the Minecraft movie, which I didn't watch, and then the last one is episode of Bardock.
Oh my god!
Dragon Ball special.
Yeah, that one's pretty ass. My half stars are Minecraft, Dashcam, and Spookly the Square Pumpkin. And then like the offensively bad and not good enough to be like funny was Tarot with one star.
Yeah.
The Boy and the Heron, didn't like it. Two stars. Sorry, Ghibli tards. Oh, can't say tard anymore. Venom 3, hilariously mid. Terrifier 2, Red 1. I feel bad for giving Halloween Town two stars. I don't know why it did that. I think I just got bored. I can only give it three, like, now that I'm thinking about it again.
Three,
but yeah,
maybe.
Most of my stuff is, like, in between 3 to 5 stars. I have a shit ton of, like, 4-star reviews. I love giving things 4 stars.
Yeah, that's...
I've given so many things 4 stars.
Do you guys want to know a crazy secret about me? One of my 2.5-star movies is the original Mad Max.
Insane.
2.5.
That's kind of insane.
And my rating is 2.5 because I already know there's better. She's just a fresh baby. Everyone
be nice. Max Rockatansky. Yeah, the second Mad Max is fucking nuts.
Yeah, but my half-star reviews are Minecraft Movie, Red One, Mousetrap. I just didn't like Mousetrap.
Offensively bad.
Tarot was half a star. It wasn't even offensively bad. My review was fine. It was fine. My 2 1.5 star films, one is a joke, one is real, is Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers. I gave 1.5 stars.
Flushed Away?
Don't spoil it. I hate the Sleepaway Camp movies.
Yeah, they kind of. The first one is like really the like good the first it's time camp. You watch it. Then it's fine the rest of the times, and then I just don't like the other two.
The second one, I was just kind of unhappy the whole time. I think I fell asleep, and like I don't know.
Three, I will give a little credit. It does like just kind of like go off the rails and become funny, which is like, you know, I'll always like it more than whatever else.
Three did what Final Destination 5 does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Flushed Away, I don't know why I gave it 1.5 stars, but my rating is excellent. Film Flushed Away is one of my favorites. And then my biggest like solid like 2 stars, I am so upset that it had to be this way, is Venom Last Dance.
It didn't have a villain,
because let me read you guys my review. Imagine this being the first and only piece of Venom media you've ever seen. Now imagine wanting to cry because Venom dies and Memories by Maroon 5 starts playing. Why did they let this movie out?
It has five
redeemable parts. They put it in between freshman film students' best attempt. I was so sad when Venom died.
I'll never forget you, buddy.
Here's to the ones that we love.
It's so unserious. I also hate when movies don't take themselves seriously, because you can be a comedy and
take yourself seriously.
You're an adult.
Thank you all for tuning in.
Yeah, this has been another wonderful episode.
Coffee and credits. Severance.
Yeah, no one responded last time in the comments. But guys, let me know if you want me to record an hour-long video of me elaborating on things that I felt too bad to ramble on.
The comments, they got lost in the mail, but they were there. They wanted to see.
I think I've solidified myself out of the three of us as the best reader of words on a screen. So I'm gonna try this, and if I stutter or fuck up, you guys can kick me off the show and kill me.
Yes.
So with that being said, thank you for watching. You can find us wherever you stream podcasts at The Salesman After Hours and at Salesman Pod on all socials. That includes Instagram, TikTok. You can find us on YouTube. You're already watching on YouTube. Like, subscribe.
You're smart. You know where to find us.
Super didn't have a gun to his head while he was saying that.
No.
In a more friendlier way, find us wherever you stream podcasts.
Ooh, let's integrate back into our Audi form. Guys, let's do it. This will be the cut of the video. Ready? Here we go. Bye, guys.
Bye.